All right. Hello, everyone, and a very happy Wednesday to you. And Nirmala's title, The Miracles Hidden in Every Experience. It was interesting listening to you talk about the lottery, Nirmala, because I do play the lottery, but I play it for Awakening Together's Retreat House fundraising campaign. In fact, I've already told my family that, you know, should a ticket win, it is not our money. So it's interesting listening to you talk about that possible karmic connection. But I know that Eckhart Tolle, part of his story is when he felt the guidance after his awakening, he felt the guidance to move to West Coast America. And he arrived and didn't have any money or anything. And he felt to go in and buy a lottery ticket. And he won an amount that was sustained him until some more funds started coming in another way. So so I'll take that karmic connection. I'll assume it has exceptions. but I think it's probably important, you know, when doing something like winning the lottery, you know. So, for example, like I said, I play for Awakening Together's Retreat House campaign fund. You know, it's important to be aware that if I win, that's why I played, right? And not suddenly say, well, wait a minute. In fact, there was a song that inspired me to play the lottery. And Nirmala, you can go. I know that you have other places to go, but I'm going to go ahead and see if I can find this song for the other people since I started this story. There's a song that inspired me about a month ago to start playing the lottery, or maybe it was 2 months ago. I don't know. It was just, all I know is it's during the summertime. Jasmine was here. And when I heard this song, play the song, and then I'll tell you the rest of the story. Okay, here it is. So this is the song that inspired me to play the lottery for Awakening Together, for the Retreat House Fund, and I'll use it as my opening song today. It's from Fiddler on the Roof, and it's called If I Were a Rich Man. Listen to the lyrics of this song, and then I'll tell the rest of the story.
If I were a rich man, I don't need no dong. All day long I'd biddy biddy bump. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. I don't need no dino 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 dong. If I were a biddy biddy rich, I don't need no dino dino man. I'd build a big courthouse with the rooms by the dozen, right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down. And one more leading nowhere just for show. With chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, and squawking just as noisily as they can, and each with a creak and a quack and a hawk and a quack would land like a trumpet on the ear, as if to say here lives a wealthy man. If I were a rich man, yido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dong. All day long I'd biddy-biddy-bump. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Yido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dido-dong. If I were a biddy-biddy-rich, yido-dido-dido-dido-man. I see my wife, my golding, looking like a rich man's wife with a proper double chin, supervising meals to a heart's delight. I see her putting on airs and strutting like a peacock,
Why? What a happy mood she's in.
Screaming at the servants day and night. The most important man in town would come to fawn on me. They would ask me to advise them, like Solomon the Wise. If you please, Levitavia, pardon me, Levitavia. Posing problems that would cross the rabbi's eyes. Hey-da-dee-da-dum, hey-da-dum, hey. And it won't make one bit of difference if I answer right or wrong. When you're rich, they think you really know. If I were rich, I'd have the time that I lack to sit in the synagogue and pray, and maybe have a seat by the eastern wall, and I'd discuss the holy books with the learned men 7 hours every day. That would be the sweetest thing of all. If I were a rich man, dino 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 dino, all day long I'd biddy biddy bump. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Dino 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 dino. Lord, who made the lion and the lamb, you decreed I should be what I am. Would it spoil some vast eternal plan? If I were a wealthy man.
Hey. All right, so that's the song. That's the song that inspired me. And Jasmine, when Jasmine was here this summer, we would work out together in our gym. Because I am a wealthy man. I have a gym. And we were working out at our gym and we would listen to musicals. And I was listening to the song while I was working out. And I was listening to some of the lyrics, some of the things like, you know, if I were a rich man, I'd have a big house in the middle of town. And, of course, the purpose of that is so that everybody can see me, right? I would have a big staircase going up and another big staircase coming down and a third staircase leading nowhere just for show. Can you hear the ego in this? I would have all of these, you know, chickens and ducks and geese that quacked really loudly in the yard for everyone to see and hear. You know, basically the birds would say, "Here lives a wealthy man." You know, all of the other men in town would come to me for advice, and it doesn't even matter if I'm right or wrong. Just because I'm rich, they're going to believe me. As I'm listening to this song, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, what an unfortunate point of view. And although this song is a comical exaggeration, you know, there's just this realization that this is what we as humankind, this is what we tend to do with money. We dress me up, right? It's an ego booster, me. We dress me up. And that's what this song was all about. And then, of course, he came to the line where he said, you know, if I were a rich man, then I would have what I lack, which was time to pray. And I just thought, boy, that's just not at all true. You know, I don't lack anything. I mean, I just could just see it. I don't lack anything. I don't need anything. I have everything I want. I have time, you know, everything is perfect. And I just really felt that. And that's when, just suddenly this idea came, because I didn't play the lottery, but this idea came to play the lottery for the Awakening Together Retreat House Fund. And when I went to give the money, to Awakening Together for the retreat house. And if there happened to be a large amount of winnings, more than Awakening Together needed, well then, The second priority was to put some African children through college. Maybe third priority would be, because I have absolutely no retirement. So maybe third priority, a little bit, if there's still money left, put some aside, whatever felt appropriate, just to make sure the Regina body is taken care of and never will need to be dependent on anyone else. And then if there was still money, if there happened to be a really big win, start a private foundation that would give the money to others. For example, maybe giving money, for example, to Bentinho to help with his dream. Maybe some to Adyashanti. He has a dream about a radio studio kind of thing, or a recording studio kind of thing. So share the wealth. But, of course, the very first priority being the Awakening Together Retreat House. And Yeah, I think that the only purpose for the money would really, it would really be a spiritual purpose. That would be the primary purpose. But I'll talk more about, some of the explosive visions about the Awakening Together Retreat House on Sunday night. But I guess I'll just mention Hal's here now. So I'll just mention Hal was here a couple weeks ago, and Hal and I went down to La Vida, and I made a wrong turn, and we landed in the lap of this beautiful ranch that's for sale. Just gorgeous. I mean, Hal got out of the car. Here we are on this private property, but Hal got out of the car and walked up to the river that ran through the property and just stood there and felt it, and I followed him. And I mean, this place just seemed perfecto. But the place is $5.5 million. And to be honest, even $5.5 million wouldn't be enough, because it's a large enough place that you're going to need some kind of a trust in order to maintain it. Furniture is going to have to be bought. There were buildings there that Hal and I talked about could be converted to dorm rooms and converted to, like a speaking arena, kind of a gathering place. So, $10 million, might be a sufficient amount of money. And yeah, $5.5 million is the cost on the place. So really, I'm just feeling to play the lottery. We may end up with something much more humble, through our normal fundraising processes. Right now we have $135,000. There are some humble places that we could get that we have our eye on for closer to the $400,000 and $500,000 range. So maybe that's where we'll go. Or maybe we'll have a place like the one that Hal and I saw, which if you guys saw it, you would understand. It just felt so perfect for this vision. I mean, it really felt perfect. It didn't feel extravagant. It didn't feel like too much. It actually felt just right. So I'll talk more about that on Sunday night at the member meeting, and I'll share some pictures with y'all of that and a couple other places nearby. But that's why I play the lottery now. So, with all of that said, it is time for us to look at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And today, I am beginning on page 10, question number 21. Here's the question. I just spilled water everywhere, so 1 second. Let me just wipe up this water. All right, here's the question. Is it necessary for one who longs for release to inquire into the nature of the categories? Oh, yeah, I remember looking at this question last week and telling you that, this is probably a question related to Hindu teaching, because the categories, apparently the questioner knows what the categories are. And Ramana Maharshi, being from the same culture, probably knew what the categories are. I have no idea what the categories are. But let's see what we get out of this answer anyway. So is it necessary for one who longs for release to inquire into the nature of the categories? And Ramana Maharshi said, just as one who wants to throw away garbage. Yes, I remember this answer already. Just as one who wants to throw away garbage has no need to analyze it and see what it is, so one who wants to know the true self has no need to count the number of categories or inquire into their characteristics. What he has to do is to reject altogether the categories that hide the true self. The world should be considered like a dream. So again, I still don't know what the categories are. So out of my ignorance, do you want to hear what this says to me? I'll tell you what this says to me. It says to me the same thing that NTI Revelation says. When I first started this process of awakening through my desire and my intention to do so, my first introductions were really twofold. One was A Course in Miracles. And then within a couple of months of starting with A Course in Miracles, I also somehow discovered the teachings of David Hoffmeister. I think what I did was just a search for A Course in Miracles teacher, and David was the first one to come up. I think that's what happened. It was just a Yahoo search. And David at that time, I don't know what David's website is like now. I haven't looked in, 10 years or more. But at that time, David had a website that just had all these audio links, and you could literally, kind of like ReginaDonAkers.com now, right? Just all of these free audios, and you could just sit and listen to audios forever. And that's what I did. I went out and I bought myself this big, huge blue beanbag chair, and I put it in the room next to my computer, and I would turn on one of David's audios, and I would sit back in that chair, and I would just listen for hours at a time. And so although today I don't distinctly remember much of what I heard in those audios, in a way it's all been kind of forgotten, I feel that the beginning of my forgiveness process, that its foundation lied in those audios, those early audios of David Hoffmeister. And what I learned to do in those audios was to look at my mind to notice what he called the content of the thought. Is this, and I talked about this actually in Gentle Healing without telling the backstory. I talked about this in Gentle Healing last night. But like the content of the thought might be, this is a guilt thought, or this is a fear thought, or this is a blame thought, or this is a whatever. And then I started looking at the beliefs that kind of supported and held up that content. And I started attempting to let go of beliefs. Like some of the beliefs that I saw as I was looking at my thoughts and the way that I learned, some of the beliefs that I saw were obviously the unworthiness thought was one of the first one. In fact, it came up as self-hatred. There was one of the earlier beliefs that came up, of course, was the belief in betrayal. When I was with Laurent, there was that belief in rejection. There was a belief that I could be used by other people. And what I would do is I would uncover one of these, what I considered major beliefs. Is I would really focus on, and I would say I did this almost at a one at a time thing. I really would focus on letting go of unworthiness, and this would be the total scope of my spiritual practice for a time. Or I would really focus on letting go of the belief in betrayal, and that was the total scope of my spiritual practice for a time. And what's really interesting is I actually had great success. I have been able to let go of major beliefs through that concentrated focus on the purpose of letting go of the beliefs, being very careful. Oh, hate was another one, right? I let go of hate. I had great success. But after I had great success with several of these beliefs, maybe just the ones I've listed now, that may be all of them, I had let go of several of these beliefs. It became apparent to me that if I continued to go after beliefs one at a time, that this would take a really long time, this awakening process, and that what I had done was I had disengaged from enough beliefs to know that I don't have to believe the mind at all. I had disengaged from enough beliefs to know that there's nothing really, you know, wholesome about the mind's chatter. And now, instead of, you know, seeking out the next belief that needed to be let go, I could just begin the process of letting go of the mind itself. Basically, what I had learned through letting go of these major beliefs, well, first of all, I had cleared away a lot of confusion, which gave me a lot more clarity, which is always, always helpful. But in addition to that, the value that I had on my thoughts, which was enormous, I didn't know it, but it was enormous when I started. In fact, I valued my thoughts more than anything else, anything, more than money, more than my daughter, more than anything. The enormous value that I had had on my thoughts through this process that I'd gone through of letting go of 5 or 6 major beliefs, I no longer had that value on the thoughts anymore because I'd kind of seen the thoughts for what they are. So now that I knew that chatter itself, you know, the mind itself, and again, I'm not referring to what I'll call the useful mind, which is like the mind I used this morning to pay bills, right, and subtract out of the checkbook, right? That's the useful mind. That mind is fine. But the chattering mind, since the value had been taken out of the chattering mind, I no longer really perceived it as valuable. Now I could begin the process of just because it's the mind, let it go. I didn't have to look and see what the content of a thought was anymore. I didn't have to look and see what was underneath that content, what belief was holding it up anymore. I didn't have to practice root cause inquiry. I didn't have to practice choose again process. I didn't have to practice Byron Katie. In effect, I had gotten the value out of those things, or I hadn't used each of those, but I had used my own inquiry process, as you know. I'd gotten the value out of that type of inquiry. And now I was ready just for self-inquiry, which is just simply noticing it's the mind, therefore it's meaningless, right? And without knowing what the categories are, that's what I hear in this answer. In fact, maybe the categories are things like content of thoughts and beliefs, right? I don't have to go through all of that type of work. I did in the beginning. In the beginning, I would not have let go of a thought just because the mind thought it. I needed to learn what I learned through that process. But once I learned it, I could leave that process behind and just begin letting go of the mind itself simply because it's the mind. So that's what I hear in this answer. And let me read the question and answer again so that you can listen and see if that's what you hear as well. Number 22, is there no different? Oh, no, sorry, number 21. Is it necessary for one who longs for release to inquire into the nature of the categories? Just as one who wants to throw away garbage has no need to analyze it and see what it is, so one who wants to know the true self has no need to count the number of categories or inquire into their characteristics. What he has to do is to reject altogether the categories that hide the self. The world should be considered like a dream. And actually, there's a Hindu word here next to categories. Let me just go look that Hindu word up real quick and see if that gives us any more insight into what specifically they're talking about here. No. I looked up the Hindu word. The Hindu word is tattvas, T-A-T-T-V-A-S. And when I looked it up in the glossary, it said categories or principles. So that was no help at all. All right. So anyway, that's number 21. And I guess, you know, some people might ask, well, so does that mean I don't need to use the choose again process? Does that mean I don't need to use Byron Katie? Does that mean I don't need to use root cause inquiry? I would say it's a matter of your ability just to let go because it's the mind and for no other reason. So, you know, if you can look, you know, if your mind can bring up some kind of a fear or some kind of a guilt thought, and you can honestly and sincerely look right at it and say, you know, that's the mind and I'm the self, and let it go in a genuine way, then you don't need those other inquiry processes. But if you're still stuck because you actually unknowingly still have value in your mind, you still believe your mind is your wisdom. And if your mind is telling you have something to fear, you think the mind's right. Or if the mind is telling you you're guilty, you think the mind knows what it's talking about. If you still have that kind of value in your thinking, then you probably still need those other inquiry processes. I would say those other inquiry processes are kind of like a crowbar. You know, we're so attached to the mind. Those other processes are kind of like a crowbar, you know, that are prying you away from the mind, in effect. But then once you're pried away a certain amount, you get some distance from the mind. And you start to see the mind itself has no value, and then the letting go process becomes much, much easier. Then there's no reason to go back to those inquiry processes, right? You just let go of the mind, let go of the mind, let go of the mind. So yeah, Kathy's asking, is there suffering? Yeah, so if there is suffering, if you're really that attached to what the mind is saying, then you probably still need the inquiry processes. But I love the image of, you know, when you want to take out the trash, you know, you don't have to go through the trash and look at everything first. You just take it out, right? And that's really the goal, is to get to that point where you don't need to be looking. Which what you're really doing with inquiry is you're convincing yourself to let go, because you aren't ready to just let go. So you need help. You need to see something. You need some kind of an insight. You need to be convinced to let go, right? And so that's what's happening with the inquiry process. But once you just notice that's the mind, you know, it's the mind's unwholesome, worthless chatter, and you can just let go, well, then you just take the garbage out. Just throw it out, right? So let's look at number 22. Is there no difference between waking and dream? Waking, and by the way, waking here, they don't mean awakening. They mean the state that we're all in right now. We're not in bed with our eyes closed dreaming. We are, you know, awake in the world, right? We're awake, conscious, in our subject-object duality way. So that's what they mean by waking. So this guy is asking, is there any difference between waking, the state of awakeness that I'm in now where I, you know, perceive duality? Is there any difference between this and a dream? That's the question, right? Because this seems more real. So is there any difference between this and my nighttime dreams? Is there no difference between waking and dream? And here's the answer. Waking is long and a dream is short. Other than that, there is no difference. Just as waking happenings seem real while awake, so do those in a dream while dreaming. In dream, the mind takes on another body. In both waking and dream states, thoughts, names, and forms occur simultaneously. And that's all there is to that answer, but you know, obviously, ever since I began this process with A Course in Miracles and the teachings of David Hoffmeister, this whole idea that the world is a dream is just, you know, it's just an amazing dream and amazing idea, amazing concept, amazing thought. And in fact, I remember sitting on that big blue beanbag next to my computer, listening to David talk about how the world was a dream, the world was an illusion. And I would look at my bookshelf, because that's what was directly across the room from my beanbag chair. I would look at my bookshelf full of books and I'd just be like, but it looks so real. You know, how can this be a dream? It looks so real. And I remember one day, Jasmine was in the next room, and she was probably six, seven at the time. And I'm listening again to David Hoffmeister talk about the world as an illusion. It's all a projection of my mind and all of that. And I yell out, I go, Jasmine. She goes, yeah. And I go, do you think you're real? She goes, yeah. Yeah. Gosh. You know, I just couldn't figure out this whole teaching. It was just so bizarre. So bizarre. So over the many years, do you think you're real? Yeah. Over the many years, this is one thing that has been contemplated deeply a number of times. Because I didn't want to just believe David Hoffmeister or A Course in Miracles. In fact, to just believe David Hoffmeister or A Course in Miracles that the world is an illusion, if they were wrong, it could be a very stupid mistake. I needed to know. I needed to have direct experiences that taught me this. And that was foremost in my heart. In fact, Dove might remember way back, you know, when this was foremost in my heart, Dove might remember that I used to say that that was my purpose, to learn as a direct experience that the world is not real. And that had a whole lot to do with everything I did. That was my spiritual aspiration for years. And there were several ways that I was answered. One of the ways was that I personally was guided to leave my job, as you guys know. And move, and of course, you know, begin writing NTI and all of that. But what's really important here was the leave my job piece. Because in my traditional thought system, this is how one takes care of oneself. You go out, you get a job, you work hard, you do your best, you get promoted, you earn money, you save money for your retirement. Right? You have a 401k, you invest wisely, and this is how you take care of yourself. This is the way the world works. And I received very distinct, unquestionable guidance to leave that. That's leaving my foundation of safety. And it brought up a whole lot of fear. But I wanted to learn for myself that the world was not real. And I knew intuitively that if I held on to taking care of myself in the way I always had, when I had this guidance, again, it wasn't my idea to leave my job, but when I had this guidance, I knew that I had to follow the guidance in order to learn what I wanted to learn. I knew that if I stayed in my comfort zone, taking care of myself in the way I had always taken care of myself, that I wouldn't learn that lesson. Right? If I stayed within the rules of this is how the world works, I'm going to keep right on thinking the world is real. So I left my job and I moved to North Carolina and I followed all of the different guidances that came, you know, including, you know, joining with Laurent. And there were a lot of details of that story that I don't think have ever been told. Some of them maybe have been told on occasion. This one I might even have told to Rick Archer, though I'm not sure, but it's not a story I've told many times. Laurent didn't have a job, but Laurent did come from a rich family. If I were a rich man, do do do. And Laurent, had two gold credit cards. And basically the way things worked is he would just do whatever he wanted and put them on those credit cards, and his dad paid the bill. He never even saw the bills. And he traveled wherever he wanted, bought whatever he wanted, went to as many massages as he wanted, as many fortune tellers as he wanted. He did whatever he wanted. But when he came to live with me, his dad didn't approve of that. And his dad basically told him that, he either needed to leave, come back to France or do something else. He didn't even really have to go to France, just leave, leave Regina, or he would be cut off. And Laurent chose not to leave. And so he was cut off. And when he was cut off, he suddenly became literally penniless. And at this time, I'm in North Carolina. I'm teaching in ACIM Gather. We have started the Foundation for the Holy Spirit and Awakening Together. NTI is being published. But literally at this point in my life, we are at the very, very, very beginning of all this. The amount of donations that were coming in per month equaled zero. The amount of royalties coming in from NTI equaled zero. You hear the zeros in that? And my money's running out. The money that I had, had saved all of my life, I had been living off of since I had left my job, and it's running out. And now Laurent comes and lives with me, and he's got these extravagant ideas. At least to me, they were extravagant. He wants to go get a massage and go do this and go do this. And now this is all on my dime. Buy the most expensive butter. Right? Most expensive water, everything. And I started getting really scared. Again, I've been through this fear before. I started getting really, really, really scared. And there were a couple things that really pushed this fear to its limit. One was I received guidance, and sometimes I got angry at Holy Spirit. Okay, I did it anyway, but I got angry. And so I'm about to tell you two times when I got angry. I did it anyway, but I got angry. I was pissed. Okay? Holy Spirit guided me to give my checkbook to Laurent and let him manage the money and for me to ask no questions. My ego's screaming, that's my money. He spends money in foolish ways. He just goes out to California when he wants to, goes and gets a massage when he wants to. He doesn't think at all about the bills, right? I give the checkbook to Laurent. I have no idea what's happening to the money because I was told to ask no questions. And then, two or three months later, I receive what now is pretty cool, but then it felt like the death blow, like God was trying to kill me. I received this guidance to move to Pueblo. Now, the reason that felt like a death blow is because although I haven't been watching the money, I know what it was when I turned it over to Laurent. I know we're down to at least our last $10,000, and Laurent has the checkbook, and he is flying off to California and flew up to see some girl in some other state for a while. He's doing all this stuff with my money. And now I'm supposed to move to Pueblo. Well, it costs money to move. It costs money. You have to pay a moving van. You have closing costs on your new house. It costs money to move. And I was really, really, really angry. I felt like, I'll tell you what I felt like. I'm trying not to swear here because it's against our sanctuary. It's against our sanctuary etiquette. But every thought that is coming to my head right now about how I felt is a swear word. And it's directed at God, at Holy Spirit. I was so angry. And what I did was I went out in my car, and for some reason I happened across the song. I think I was listening to Jesus Christ Superstar, and I happened across the song, The Garden of Gethsemane. And I'm listening to that song, and Jesus is angry in that song because, you know, now God's asking him to be crucified. And I really identified with Jesus. I felt the same way. I listened to that song over and over and over again, I think for like 2 or 3 hours. And I cried and I cried. And I started noticing because I had a skylight, you know, a moonroof, a sunroof, whatever they call them in my car. So I'm, you know, as I'm crying and screaming and yelling at God and listening to this song, I'm looking up above me. And there's this squirrel above me. And the squirrel starts breaking off the limbs in this tree that's above me. And one by one, these limbs start falling. And I'm not thinking anything about it. You know, I'm still in there having my own little ego, fear, anger trip. But then after a few hours, I happen to notice the squirrel, for some reason, and God knows why, had taken all of the limbs, broken all the limbs out of this portion of the tree. So directly above me, there's this perfect circle, and I can see right up to the perfect blue sky. And it just suddenly hit me. And by the way, this is only one. I could spend all day telling stories. But it just suddenly hit me. The world's not real, and I'm acting as if it is. I'm acting as if I need to have a certain amount of money in my bank account or I'm not going to be okay. I mean, that's what that circle pointing at the blue sky. The blue sky represented truth, God, right? The self. And the squirrel, while I'm in my car having this anger attack, creates a perfect circle directly above my head pointing at the blue sky to remind me of the truth. How can the world be real? That is just too freaky. I've never seen a squirrel do anything like that in my life. That squirrel was an agent of truth. And so I quit crying. I quit being angry. I got out of the car, went in the house, now resolved that I'm going to move to Pueblo. And I don't know when that was. That was probably in May or June of 2008. And in June of 2008, I went to Beaumont, Texas, bless their souls, to do a gathering that invited me there to speak at a Unity church. And I was probably telling them this story because this was a very recent, raw story then, right? And someone in the audience raised her hand. You know, and I had let them know that I decided I was going to go to Pueblo, right? And she raised her hand and she said, "How do you know that you're going to be okay?" I said, I don't know. I said, "Just watch me." That was the only answer I had. Just watch me. Watch and see what happens. You know, because what else could I say? About a month later, I get an email from the same woman. And by the way, at this point, the donations were still zero. The royalties were still zero. I get a letter from this woman, and she says she is feeling guided to tithe to me. Well, I was happy, but I did not perceive this as the answer to anything because, you know, what's 10% of, you know, of a person's salary? I mean, you know, like, you know, if she makes $70,000 a year, $7,000 a year, that's sweet, but that's not going to take care of me, right? I'm still waiting for God's answer. And the first check that came was very modest check. But the letter was phenomenal. Because what this person was a physician. And she had always worked at a hospital. And she had, just before coming to Beaumont to listen to me, she had felt guided to leave the hospital that she'd always worked for and start her own private practice. But under her contract with the hospital, she couldn't take any of her patients from there. You know, so she lost all of her patients, they all stay with the hospital. And also her guidance was not to advertise. basically she was just to go out, get an office, you know, maybe hang a shingle, right? And wait for patients to show up. And you know what she's doing? She's doing the exact same thing I'm doing. She's out there learning the world is not real. We are actually joined in purpose, even though you could say we're two strangers. We're joined in purpose. She's terrified as well, which is what led her to ask the question, how do you know you're going to be okay? Because in a way, in her own way, she's in the exact same situation. And then she receives this guidance to tithe to me. Now, in her letter, she's telling me all of this. And she tells me that when she said yes to the guidance and when she emailed me and said, hey, I have this guidance to tithe you, she had four patients, four, which is not a lot, but she had four. After she emailed me and said she was going to tithe to me, all four of her patients canceled their relationship with her. All four of them quit. She went down to zero patients. And this terrified her. And her mind was, you know, even though she had just made money in the last month with these four patients, she has no appointments in the future, no patients at all. And her mind is saying, you can't send her 10% of last month. You're going to need that. You know, you've got all these bills, right? You've got this new office, you've got a home, you've got a car, you know, you can't do this. And she decides to write the check for 10% of her last month anyway and send it. Wow. Now that's impressive. Like I said, the check was modest, but the faith, wow. I mean, it just, to this day, it takes my breath away. There's tears in my eyes right now. Well, I want you guys to know, this is a bit of a secret, but I have to tell the rest of the story. To this day, I survive financially on this person's donations. When you all donate to Awakening Together, that goes to all of our other expenses, and we have plenty of them. We do need your donations, don't get me wrong. But not a penny of it goes to my salary. The world's not real, gang. Because that kind of thing doesn't happen under the laws of the world. You know, when she put forth that faith, I put forth the faith to go ahead and move to Pueblo without having any idea how I was going to survive. She put forth the faith to write that check, having no idea how she was going to survive. And the universe just, the abundance flew wide open. Patients started showing up. Her tithing started getting bigger. I mean, to this day, I survive off of it. And that's just one of many, many, many stories I could tell you. What this taught me was to trust my guidance and forget about the rules of the world. Just trust my guidance. You know, we have We have 10 minutes left, so let me tell you a couple more quick stories. And again, these still aren't the only stories I have. Have you guys heard the story about my broken toe? It's a good one, too. This happened, I don't know exactly when, except we were packing boxes, so we might have been packing to move to Pueblo. I can't imagine why else we would have had all those boxes, but I don't remember that specifically. So I could be wrong, too. We could have been packing boxes to give stuff to charity, you know, Jasmine's clothes she grew out of or something. So I don't really remember, but I know we were packing boxes, and we had some boxes sitting in the hallway, and I forgot that they were there, and I came walking out of my bedroom really quickly and round the corner, and I caught my little toe on the corner of these boxes, and they were packed, so they were heavy, and my toe broke. It was sticking straight out in a way a toe does not point, and it really hurt. There were some more swear words. More swear words. And it kind of scared me too, because I'm kind of a squeamish type. So looking down and seeing my toe pointing in the direction that it was pointing kind of scared me too. But I received distinct guidance not to go to the doctor. I was told to put on a tight sock that would hold my toe in position and ice it. And that's what I did that night. This happened in the evening around 5 o'clock, if I remember correctly. When I woke up the next morning, the whole top half of my foot was black and blue. I mean, just the whole top half of my foot, not just around the toe. And I was guided again to put on a sock and put ice on it. Not go to the doctor. Got a phone call from a friend that morning, told my friend what was going on. The friend's like, "You got to go to the doctor." I'm like, "Nope, I'm not going to the doctor. I don't have guide. I'm guided not to." Around 5 o'clock that evening, I suddenly heard, the exact words were, "Physician, heal thyself." But the understanding that came with those words were to go sit down and let myself be healed, right? And so I went and sat down on the love seat, and Jasmine sat down next to me. And I started feeling what I could only call love. This love was coming in through the top of my head. It went all the way through my body and down to my foot. And I just sat there on the love seat for, 3 to 5 minutes. Not a long period of time, but, not instantaneously either. Feeling this love, allowing this love to move through me. And then it stopped. And then I was told to stand up, and I stood up. And by the way, I hadn't been able to touch this foot to the ground. That's how sore it was. I would walk on the very back part of my heel with my foot up in the air because I couldn't touch my foot to the ground. It was so sore. So I stood up, and now I'm standing on my foot in a normal way. But then I'm told to hop on it. And I, hop on that foot that 5 minutes ago I couldn't even touch to the floor because it hurt so bad. It was completely, completely healed. And I knew that the reason that I had lived with the pain for 24 hours instead of it just being healed instantly was because if it had healed instantly, my mind would have said, "Oh, it must not have been as hurt as bad as you thought it was," right? It must not have been as bad as you thought it was if it healed so quickly. So I had to live with that pain for 24 hours so that my mind could not talk me out of realizing the world is not real, because broken toes don't heal that way in a real world. That was the moral of the story. It was helping me with my spiritual aspiration. I wanted direct experiences that taught me the world is not real. Yeah, the burnt hand, absolutely. Yeah, the time I took the salmon out of the oven with the 450 degree pan and forgot all about the potholder and grabbed a hold of it and my hand was burnt. Yeah. Yeah, Sunny, I don't remember that story as well. I remember it happened. I remember there was no burn the next morning. No burn at all. The burn was not there. It hurt so bad. But I don't remember a lot of details about that story. And then there's NTI. The way NTI was published, did you guys know I was guided not to look for a publisher? And again, the reasoning was because I had to be taught that the world was not real. And if I looked for the publisher in the traditional way, writing all the letters, doing all the market research, sending off to all the publishers, I would think I did this. And I would still think the laws of the world applied. So I was guided not to look for a publisher. And I remember we went to one of the CMC conferences in San Francisco, and there was this one guy. He's not with us anymore. I don't remember his name. It started with an M. But there was this one guy who came up to me and was saying, "Hey, that guy over there is, I can't remember his name either. Who was Gary Renard's first publisher?" Anyway, he was standing right over there. He's like, "Go talk to him. Tell him about NTI. He got Gary Renard started. He can get you started." He's like, "Right there. Patrick somebody." I'm like, I can't. I was guided. Yep. D. Patrick Miller. That's it. I said, I can't. I was guided not to look for a publisher, even though D. Patrick Miller is, you know, 10 feet away from me. I can't go over and start talking to him. I just can't. And this guy got mad at me and started yelling at me right there. Regina, that's such a good book and you're wasting your opportunity. And, you know, but I wanted to learn that the world was not real more than I wanted to get into iPublished. And Dove knows the rest of this story. You know, basically, Nook Sanchez had just recently been published, and I didn't know Nook Sanchez then, but she had recently been published by O Books, and she was calling different people, kind of introducing herself in the A Course in Miracles teaching community. And I don't, you know, I'll tell the story the way I remember it. Dove might remember it slightly different, but that's unimportant because, you know, memories remember things differently. But the way I remember the story is that, she had called, I think, Gary Renard, who was a friend of hers, and he suggested that she call Robert and Mary Stolting of, what's their organization called? anyway, and they were talking to Nook, and then they suggested that she call Dove. And so she called Dove, and he's talking to her, and then he suggests, yeah, Pathways of Light, that's it, thank you, that's their organization. And he suggests that she call me. So she calls me, and as far as I know, in this call, all that's happening, the only thing that I'm aware of, if there's more going on, I didn't know it. The only thing I'm aware of is that Nook is just calling around getting to know everybody. And so she calls me, and I'm like, well, tell me about yourself. And so she tells me all about, you know, her book and all of this. And then she says, so tell me about yourself. And whenever anybody says that, I honestly can't think of a thing to say. So the only thing I thought of was, well, I wrote this book named, NTI, and you know, what have you done with it? Oh, nothing. You know, I've been guided to wait for a publisher, so that's what I'm doing. And she goes, oh, you should send it to my publisher. I said, no. I've been guided to wait, and that's what I'm going to do until a publisher shows up. And she goes, Regina, I think you have a green light on this one. And the way she said it, it was like an arrow going through my heart. I knew. That this was it. This was the phone call I was waiting for. And so she told me how to send the manuscript to her publisher. I sent it to her publisher and had a contract within a week. And I never did all the work you're supposed to do to get published. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I lived not by the ways of the world. I lived by guidance. And things just kept happening, right? And that's not including things like the Apple story. It's not including the time that a dime fell through the ceiling in my house. It's not including lots and lots of stories, right? So now I don't doubt that the world's a dream. I know it seems real. But things just wouldn't be happening the way they're happening if the world operated by the rules that I had taught the world operated by. So yeah, maybe the lottery money will grow on a tree. Who knows how we'll get our retreat house. I know the retreat house is guided and I know we'll get it. And the rest of it we watch, but we also have to know when to play our part, you know. Like Nook had to make those phone calls. I think that was in the movie The Secret as well. You know, in the movie The Secret, when they're teaching you manifesting, there was a woman in the movie who wanted to have a relationship, and she was sitting by a beach volleyball game, and the ball came to her, and she had to know to pick up that ball and carry it back into the game, and where she started meeting people, and that's where she met the man. If she had ignored the ball, you know, then the manifestation wouldn't have happened. So we also have to recognize when we have a part to play. So it's that balance of knowing your part, following guidance, but also letting the miracles occur. And that's it. It's time for me to relax the mic. Bye.
Thank you so much. I love hearing your stories. You know, I myself personally am working on trying not to get into stories so much. But I do love hearing these inspirational stories that you share. So thank you.